Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Happy Monday to all of you. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a subject that not too many people want to be communicative about, but we are because it's a vital one. My guest today is Larry Axemaker. He's a health educator, a psychologist, a marathoner, and also a prostate cancer survivor. He's written this fascinating book, Real Men Get Prostate Cancer Too. Larry, welcome to the show, Larry.
Thank you very much.
I thought, first of all, you've got a great sense of humor. I really enjoyed your book, and my listeners need to know that you are retired at this time after 45 years of having a career in education and a private practice in clinical psychology. You're also a health educator and obviously a writer. You've run more than 75 marathons, which is awesome, and ultra marathons, and you drive your Jeep, you say, where it shouldn't go. You're just very daring, and you think you're too old to die young and too young to die of old age. I mean, I just love this. It's just absolutely cool. What is an ultra marathon?
It's a race longer than a marathon. So I've run races 50 miles, 60, 100 miles. I've run quite a few over 100 miles.
My goodness. You're right. You're too young to die. There's just no way.
That's right.
You have such a wonderful approach in your book regarding prostate cancer that I think any woman that might want to buy this book for her husband, any man that would want to read about it, because most men, if they live long enough, apparently this is something that comes with maturing years.
Pretty likely, yes.
Yeah. Now, men died too young years ago, and so very little of this was known. It's just like a lot of things about women that they're coming to find out about because women die.
That's right. It's only in the last 10 or 15 years that we've really learned much at all about prostate cancer.
Now, why did you take on a project like this? I mean, after all, this isn't a subject matter that people are typically very comfortable with. And what is prostate cancer, and how did you find out you would have it, that you had it?
Okay, well, that's lots of questions. The reason that I decided to write a book was because I got prostate cancer. About 6 years ago, I was diagnosed. It was a surprise because, you know, I was this He-Man active guy, and there's no way in the world I was ever going to get sick, let alone cancer. And so it was kind of hard to believe that I got it. And then I had treatment, I had surgery, and it came back. And I couldn't believe that. So I said, you know, there are a lot that I don't know about it. My doctors were good. They answered my questions, but there are a lot of things that they didn't tell me. So I started checking on my own and decided, you know, I could write a book about things guys need to know and their wives that can help them survive, especially when it comes back. Because once it comes back, it's usually not curable. So there are, you know, you need to look at, okay, what can I do on my own? What kind of things can I do to, you know, live a normal length life? And so that's what I started working on, and I started writing a book about it, and it was a lot of fun. It was very therapeutic.
Oh, I can imagine. And the characters you have in cartoons, you've got cartoons.
Yes, I love to draw cartoons. I've done that for many, many years. And so in the book, I got to draw exactly what I wanted and put them in there, and that was a lot of fun.
Now, you say there are men as young as 49 that get prostate cancer.
Or younger, but usually they're in their 60s. But men do get it at younger ages, and often the younger you are, the more dangerous it is. I just lost a friend last fall who was 52, and he got it when he was about 50. It wasn't diagnosed until it had already spread to all parts of his body, and he left, you know, he left a wife and children, and that's sad.
Now, let's get down to some bare-bone basics. How does a male find out that he's got prostate cancer?
Well, there are no symptoms, first of all, so you're not going to tell because something hurts or something doesn't work. The only time there are symptoms is when it's very advanced, and then the symptoms are kind of vague. You know, you have a backache and things like that. So the only way you're going to find out in early stages is to be tested by your doctor.
And what is the test?
Well, there are a couple of tests. The most common, the age-old test that's been used for 100 years is called the DRE, Digital Rectal Exam. And most men, especially if they're over 50, know about that. It's not something that's a lot of fun, but it does give the doctor a hint. And the DRE, the doctor actually, with a rubber glove and lubricant on his finger, feels your prostate through your large intestine, and finds out if there are lumps and bumps and rough spots on it. So that's the most crude old way to do it. That's what doctors do to start with. If they find something, if they find a bump or a lump, then they will probably use a blood test, and it's called a PSA, prostate-specific antigen. And what it does is the blood shows certain antibodies that your body builds up if you do have prostate cancer. And so you get a number from that. You get, 2, 3, 5, 10, 50, whatever. Little numbers are good. 2 or 3 is a good number. 5 or 6 means that you need to be tested more. 100 or 500 or 2,000 means that it's probably late stage.
What was it like? What did you go through to find out that you had it, first of all, and then that it had come back? What was the time frame with this, and how did you deal with it?
Well, it's almost an accident I found out. I've been tested every year since before I was 50, and my PSA levels were always low enough to be considered normal. And I was even in a prostate cancer clinical trial where they gave thousands of guys pills to see if it would prevent prostate cancer. And half the guys got a pill and half the guys got a sugar pill. I ended up getting a sugar pill, but at the end of it, they offered everybody that took part in it a free prostate biopsy. Now, a biopsy is where they take a sample.
Mm-hmm.
In a prostate biopsy, they take a sample of your prostate in your prostate with a needle. And it's kind of done the same way as the digital rectal exam, except they use a spring-loaded needle and take 6 or 10 or 14 samples. And so I volunteered to do that because I was curious. And I was working as a health educator and a health writer. And I just decided to do it, and I knew for sure that I didn't have it because my PSAs were normal. And lo and behold, the next day the doctor called and said that I had a tumor. And I didn't believe it. I wanted somebody else to check. And, of course, it came out the same. And so I had surgery within, 2 months. I had surgery, had the prostate removed, the end. I knew I was cured forever. But within just 3 or 4 months, My PSA started rising again, which meant that there were prostate cancer cells growing in my body. Now, I didn't have a prostate anymore, but it was still called prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So then, about a year after my surgery, I had radiation therapy. Now, surgery is the most common thing that men have done when they have prostate cancer because, it's quick. You get rid of it, and you're supposedly cured forever. Radiation, X-ray therapy, is the second most common thing. And in my case, I didn't have a prostate, so the radiation was basically aimed around where the prostate was and where the cancer might be. And I had 37 X-ray treatments, and that supposedly was going to cure me. And after about 6 months, the PSA started coming back again. And it was then that there were no more things to do to cure it. So at that point, it became incurable prostate cancer, and then it was my job to make sure that I lived as long as possible anyway. And that's when I decided to write the book.
All right. Now, how long ago was that, Larry?
I had the surgery in 2003, the radiation therapy in 2005, so almost 6 years ago when I started.
Now, what have you done since then? Because you were given this verdict, you wrote the book. Obviously, you're a man that has taken a positioning of personal responsibility with this and doing everything you can. What are you doing at this time? I mean, I'm sure you have the test done every year or whatever. How often do they have you do it?
Every 3 months.
Every 3 months.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I did, I became involved in a clinical trial. There are lots and lots of clinical trials of all sorts of cancer medications, and I got involved in one a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now, I guess, It was a pill that, you know, somebody had discovered that they thought might slow down prostate cancer. So I was involved in a clinical study, and it turned out that pill didn't work. It didn't work for me, and it didn't work for anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so my PSA was slowly getting bigger. You know, when I had the surgery and then again with radiation, it went down to almost zero, which is good, and that's what you want it to always be anyway. And it gradually rose and rose, and it's been rising now for the last 3 years again. And I went on another therapy, which is not a cure, but it's the next one in logical step for most men who have incurable cancer, and that is hormone therapy. And for men, the thing that makes prostate cancer grow is testosterone. Now, most guys like their testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
It's what makes them a man. So you want to have, you know, if you're a guy, you want to have your testosterone, but it's also what your prostate cancer grows on. So hormone therapy is basically taking a hormone, and they're synthetic hormones now, but they basically do the same thing that estrogen does. And estrogen neutralizes testosterone in men, and it slows down the growth. So I went on hormone therapy last August, and by last week, when I had my last test, my PSA, which had been up around 7, was back down below 1, and I was able to cut down on my hormone.
Fascinating.
Now, hormones have side effects, and everything has side effects. You know that.
Oh, absolutely.
And some of the side effects of hormone therapy for prostate cancer, is that it causes your muscles and your bones to deteriorate a little bit over a long period of time. In men who take it very long, sometimes their hips will get larger, their breasts will grow. That's not something you want to happen. I joke about it, but it isn't something I want to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But an aside, a positive effect is it made my hair grow thicker. I was losing my hair, and the hormone therapy made it grow in thicker. So, you know, there's always a positive aspect to it.
You've gone through quite a journey, and in your book you cover so many different points that I was myself not familiar with. Prostatitis. What is that?
Prostatitis.
Prostatitis, excuse me.
Okay, it's a prostate disease. Thank goodness it's not cancer. A lot of men, most men, after they're 45 or 50, their prostate starts to enlarge, and so that's one kind of thing that can happen. And it's called benign prostate, BPH, hyperplasia, and it can be treated fairly easily. Prostatitis is an infection, basically, and it can be treated with antibiotics. Neither one of those are prostate cancer, and neither one end up, with a person, with a man being, you know, impotent or anything
mm-hmm.
like that, as prostate cancer treatment itself often does. So prostatitis is, you know, it's better than getting prostate cancer. It can be treated and cured.
Let's talk about family history a little bit, because that seems to come into play.
It's a big factor. Genetics, yeah.
All right. Cover that a little bit.
If what they have found is that if your father or brother or uncle has had prostate cancer, your chances of getting it are much greater. My father actually had prostate cancer, but he wasn't diagnosed till he was 85. And it never was a problem. You know, he lived to 92 and he died of heart failure. That prostate cancer was never a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I was diagnosed at 63. My sons are at risk for being diagnosed at a younger age than that. So if, I think that the statistics are that if your father and brother have prostate cancer, it's almost a slam dunk that you'll get it too. It doesn't mean that it's going to grow fast. Prostate cancer generally grows slow. So for many men, they don't even need treatment as long as they keep an eye on it and make sure that it doesn't spread.
Now, you advocate very strongly and obviously demonstrate it because of being involved in marathons, how important exercise is and diet.
Yes.
How strong an influence does this have on the condition of the prostate?
Well, nobody knows for sure, but they do know that things like being overweight has an effect. It actually makes it grow, you know, can make it grow faster. That being in good condition, your immune system can better fight it off. It's your immune system that helps keep it growing slowly, if it's growing slowly. taking, you know, I take some supplements. Mm-hmm. Just to, vitamin D is one that they found in recent years, that vitamin D and calcium and sunshine, they help to slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
Certain foods have parts of them, like different juices, like pomegranate juice, sometimes grape juice, can help slow it down just because it has an effect on cancer cells. Anything that can help cancer cells grow more slowly. Hot peppers help cancer cells grow more slowly.
That should take care of just about anything if you eat enough of them.
That's right.
I mean, they're doozies.
Yep.
You also bring out the information about the different groups of people, like the African people.
African-American men are at higher risk for prostate cancer, and nobody knows why. Asian men are at lower risk, and nobody knows why. If you live in a warmer climate, you're less likely to get it than if you live in a cooler climate.
Fascinating. And they just have no idea. And again, this is something where we are becoming more and more aware of it. One, because of technology. Two, because people are living to be so much older.
And that's the main reason. Two generations ago, nobody knew how many men died of prostate cancer because most of them weren't diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only been in the last 20 or 25 years that we have much of any kind of idea.
True. And again, your cartoons throughout it are just absolutely perfect. And, of course, I wish I could show them to people, but I cannot. Now, when you put this book together, I know you're wanting to reach the guys, but how important did you feel it was to communicate this information to women about the men in their lives?
Well, when I wrote it, and my wife was my chief editor, and I worked with another editor who was also a woman, and they encouraged me the whole time to write it as if I were writing it for the wives, the spouses, the significant others, so that they would see it, they would make sure that their husbands got in to see the doctor, and they would make sure they followed through. And so I tried to gear it so that women would be interested in reading it.
Now, I've known of men that were given this diagnosis, and there were radiation pellets.
Yes.
That were used. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, yeah, I mentioned two treatments, surgery and radiation. There are two others that are commonly used, not as often as those two, but commonly. One is radioactive pellets, and they are injected in the prostate. And radioactivity actually kills the prostate cells, and they just leave them there. They inject them and leave them, and they work for a few months, and then they lose their radiation, and they're not a problem. So that's a treatment, and that's one without, you know, there's not a problem with healing incisions. There's not a problem with sores from radiation burns and things like that. So the radioactive pellets are a good option for some men that don't want to go through pain or a healing period. Another common use is cryotherapy, freezing it. Actually, they inject very, very cold liquid into the prostate and virtually freeze it solid and thaw it and freeze it again and thaw it and freeze it again and thaw it. And that also kills the cancer cells. Now, any of these things, the radiation and the freezing and the radioactive pellets, it kills the cancer cells, but it also kills, you know, healthy cells.
Yes.
Now, the idea is the healthy cells will grow back, and that the cancerous cells won't. And there's a tendency for that to happen, but there can also be, you know, side effects. All the treatments here have similar side effects, and I haven't talked about them yet. One, the most common and scary side effect for men is impotence, you know, that they won't be sexually functional afterwards. Now, I joke with I talk to groups of men about this, and I joke with them that if they're 70 years old, it shouldn't make any difference, but of course it always does.
Oh, absolutely. It would have a tremendous effect.
But there's about a 50% chance, if you with any of these treatments, that eventually, either sooner or later, that they will be sexually impotent. And if they have more than one of these treatments, and they can often have, you know, several, that the odds are even greater. The second side effect is incontinence, and men can end up, you know, wearing a diaper at some point in their life as a result of prostate cancer treatment. Now, men have to decide, is it better to be impotent and wear a diaper and be alive or not do that and be dead, I guess. And
mm-hmm.
and a lot, there are men who would choose not to have a treatment because they don't want to have to go through those side effects that they should have.
Now, your book has so much information about the various aspects of treatment. You're very candid in your book, just as you are on the air. The cryosurgery fascinates me. Are there many doctors that are aware of this? Because to be able to free something, and you say that when the cryosurgery is done, while the prostate's being frozen, that warm salt water is circulated through a catheter in the urethra to prevent it from being frozen.
Yes.
So someone would really have to be very knowledgeable and very skilled to do this. Is this under local, or are you actually put under to have this done?
You know, I am not sure. I would imagine that they could do it under local therapy, but I am not sure. I know the radioactive pellet is just an injection, so
mm-hmm.
that's not a problem. But on the cryotherapy, I don't know. I would have to check with the doctor. Now, there are fewer doctors and clinics who do that. As far as the overall effectiveness of treatment, they're all pretty much the same. There's not one that stands out. You know, it would be nice if you would say this is the best treatment, but men have to make a choice for themselves. They don't have any kind of information that tells them that one is better than another.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also talk about, and you'll have to pronounce this word because it's a doozy, orchiectomy, the removal of the testicles?
Orchiectomy, isn't it?
Orchiectomy. I don't know how they come up with these words, but anyway.
Well, that's doc talk, and that's why I try to avoid that as much as possible.
Well, I'm not afraid to show my ignorance on this one. I mean, this is just unreal. But this is a procedure that most men would not want.
That's right.
To
castration
have.
Is quite effective if you have ongoing incurable because it stops the production of testosterone, and most men do not want that to happen. Although, in late stages, you know, it's kind of a last desperate thing that
mm-hmm.
quite a few men do. But let me tell you, that's obviously one of the options in my future, and it does not look very, you know, positive to me, but it may happen.
Mm-hmm. And so, as you said, that's a choice when it...
It gets more an ego thing at a certain point, because with all the other treatments, that they're probably not very sexually functional anyway, so...
Mm-hmm. And that is something that you want to be able to avoid, so... Being able to have yourself checked and looked at that and looking at the options. Now, what is still fascinating is, one, the differences of the African male, the Asian, the Caucasian, and the information they're coming up with, the fact that there's a genetic programming there that can affect someone. There are lots and lots of men that may not have this, but yet I keep hearing more and more that the likelihood of men getting it, it's almost like 100%. Where are they getting those stats from?
Well, if a man lives long enough, there's a very good chance, and it's probably not 100%, but it's pretty high, that as they get older, a man's chances when he's born are about 1 in 6 of getting prostate cancer. And, of course, as men get older, by the time, I'm 68, and by this, you know, by my age, probably a quarter of men who were born when I was are not alive anymore. So there are fewer men, but still a high percentage of those who are my age and older are going to get it because it's something that develops late in life, and especially if they have any kind of genetic connection to, you know, father, grandfather, uncle, whatever.
Insurance coverage. Is this something that is difficult under most insurance policies to get coverage? And what is the average cost for prostate treatment? It's pretty expensive, isn't it?
It is. Now, actually, most your common health insurances cover it. Mine, you know, I had mine done before I retired, and it was covered, you know, except for my copay by my insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm retired and on Medicare and supplement, my insurance would cover it, and it does cover the treatment that I'm getting now. As far as treatment, probably the low end for some of these treatments is around $30,000 or $40,000, and then the high end, there's another kind of radiation called proton beam radiation that is safer than X-ray radiation, and it runs up to over $100,000. And So insurance companies, that's certainly something men would want to check beforehand is, you know, will my insurance company cover this? How much will they cover? Do I need to choose a different surgeon or do I need to choose a different place? Obviously, you know, in my case, I chose a surgeon who had done a lot of prostate cancer surgeries, and the more they do, the better they get at it. And mine was covered and it wasn't that much of a problem. But men need to check that out ahead of time because it could be very, very expensive. And you know, I mentioned the hormone therapy that I've been undergoing. Now, mine is covered by my insurance, but there are some treatments that are not, and then they can run thousands of dollars a month if they're not covered by insurance.
You're a man that has a real passion for life. You are in these mega marathons and are so active in so many ways. You have decided you were going to become an educator regarding this because you yourself have been affected by it. What is your next opportunity that you're going to be taking relative to getting more people informed about this?
Well, this is one of them. I meet with groups of men. My wife and I travel as much as we can, and so whenever I go any place, I try to set up meetings with senior centers or through churches or support groups so I can meet with groups of men and try to convince them. You know, the book is available on Amazon, Amazon.com, and I have my own website, axemaker.com, www.axemaker.com, and they can buy it directly from me, and it's cheaper, and I'll sign it. So,
well, that's great. Well, I have to compliment you, Larry, because there are not too many people that would be as candid as you are. And having been affected by prostate cancer yourself and the various ways you've challenged, you go into nutrition in the book. You give a lot of information on the latest research. You have, as I said, wonderful cartoons that would be fully appreciated by anybody reading it, especially the guys. But, gals, I think it's important, too, for those of you listening, if you have a brother, a father, a husband, a male in your life, and most guys are bullheaded, aren't they, Larry?
That's true.
They are bullheaded.
Men don't go to doctors. Women do. Men don't.
Yeah, and so it's something that this, if you get this book and you check it out and you find it on Amazon, or you can go to his website, which is axemaker.com, axmaker.com. It's really going to give you an insight into something that is affecting so many men, and it is relatively new in the sense of men living so much longer and really emphasizing how important it is to take care of yourself. And if you're African-American, if you're Asian, maybe you don't have so much of a concern, but if you're African-American, you need to really pay attention to this. Larry, I want to thank you for being my guest today.
Well,
real men
you.
Get prostate cancer, too.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break in a minute, but I want to give out Larry's website again, axemaker.com. Remember, he's a health educator, a psychologist, a marathoner, mega marathoner, and a prostate cancer survivor to date. This is what you want your doctor to tell you about, but you're too scared to ask, according to Larry. I agree. Real men get prostate cancer, too. And just know that the old adage of an ounce of prevention is worth 10 pounds of cure is really a true one. Larry, again, thank you for being my guest.
Well, thank you very much for being so gracious.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break, and for just a moment, we're going to be right back. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
This is Pete Smith for OrthoTeb Health Shoes. OrthoTebs are completely heelless, invented by a doctor, and you'll burn 3 times the calories of regular walking in our sandals, 2 times the calories of regular walking in our clogs. They help you tone and trim the entire leg, thighs, buns, lower abs, and love handle area. They offer symptom improvement for people with plantar fasciitis and low back pain. Check them out on the web at www.orthoteb.net.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Hey, if you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a call at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Worldwide, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, I wanted to mention that my workshop is coming up on the 25th of April, that's a Saturday, and this is called Mind Vision. And I did a class last year, and I was so pleased with the way it turned out, I decided I'd do another one this year. And this is going to be about powering up your inner giant. Now, this is going to be held at the Center for Spiritual Living in Tacoma, Washington. That's 206 North J Street. It's $95, and that includes lunch. And if you'd like to make a reservation, 253-383-3151 is the telephone number to call. That's 253-383-3151. This is very interactive, and it enables me to communicate with anybody in the class very directly. And if you had some personal agendas that you wanted to work with, this is the class that you'll want to be a part of. We're going to be talking about how to touch that genius within yourself, working with change, designing your future, and expanding your own intuition. That was something last year that people said we'd really like to have more of. So we're going to be adding that to our program this year. So if you want to make reservations, if you're in the Pacific Northwest, give us a call at 253-383-3151. Mention that you heard this on the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll get a $10 discount. Also, I want to say you can call me at my office at 800-872-8852. That's 800-872-8852. Now, yes, that is a number. If you wanted to make a private appointment with me, that's the number, but also if you wanted to register for the class so that you have the two. Donna Sebo here, and if you want to get a reading on the air, just remember, all I need is your first name or initial, and after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. People are always adventuresome. They will find out about stories or experiences that people are going through, and they want to test things. Well, we've all heard the story about Robinson Crusoe, right? The guy gets abandoned on some island, in a desert island, and he stays alive because he's got a lot of ingenuity and he's very resourceful. And Tom Hanks did a movie, I don't remember what the movie was, pretty much with the same kind of story, and he survived. Now, we all know that there have been thousands and thousands of people through the centuries that have been a lot less fortunate, and men have been pulled away from sinking ships and lifeboats, and many of them have died of thirst and starvation. Well, there was, many years ago, a French doctor. His name was Alain Bombard, and he was curious. He said, no one should really die if you're in the ocean. You shouldn't die. So he decided he was going to become a castaway. That's right. This guy was going to go out and test the facts. So he was without any food or water. He had an open boat. He was going to just do whatever he could. And he believed that he would be able to keep himself alive far beyond the known limits of human endurance. Quite a challenge, wouldn't you say? Do you think it's something you'd want to do? I don't know that I'd volunteer for it. But this is something that he decided he was going to do. Now, this was done in the 50s, on October the 19th, 1953. He left the Canary Islands in a 15-foot rubber cockleshell of a boat to cross the Atlantic. He decided he was going to go towards the West Indies. Now, to make the experiment as realistic as it could be done, he took no food, and he took no water. That's right, no food, no water. He did not believe that if you drank seawater, that it would cause you to go mad and would hasten your death. He had a theory. He thought that shipwrecked men who suffered these kinds of circumstances had made the mistake of not drinking seawater until their bodies were already dehydrated. So you think about what they do in hospitals. If you go into a trauma, what's the first thing they give you? Usually it's a saline solution. So this is what his mind was going through. Now, he was very careful to make sure that he drank daily 1.5 pints of seawater. He also supplemented water by squeezing water out of fish that he caught from a harpoon that he was able to make. And he did not want to become a victim of scurvy. We all know that story about how sailors suffered from scurvy due to the lack of vitamin C. So he decided he would live off of plankton. He knew that plankton had this capacity of nutrition within them. So he decided that 1 or 2 teaspoons of these tiny little organisms would just give him exactly what he needed. It would provide the vitamins. Now, why he felt 1 or 2 teaspoons of it was going to work, I haven't a clue. However, what he had not planned on was a storm, and it was a doozy. It nearly wrecked the tiny little boat that he was in. The sail that he had on it ended up being ripped, and his spare he lost. The storm caused it to just end up in the sea. So he had to repair the original one with a needle and thread. Now, they said after the storm hit, within a fortnight, his diet, which was a very poor diet, combined with constantly being drenched, caused him to break out in this awful, awful rash. And he said the most hair-raising experience of all is that he had to go overboard one day to retrieve a single item. It was an inflatable cushion. It had gotten blown off of his boat. And he said it was so important to him because it was one of the things that allowed him to be comfortable with these extremely uncomfortable circumstances and environment. Now, he had a parachute type of a canvas gadget that he used to slow the boat down, but it got fouled in its trailing rope, and the boat was rapidly drifting away. Somehow or another, this contraption, his braking apparatus, decided to work. And he managed to get himself back on board. But his biggest disappointment came on the 53rd day when he, you know, saw a ship, hailed the ship, and found he had another 600 miles to go. Now, he really thought he was going to give up on this. He said his experiment in surviving for as long as he did, for 53 days, had been proven. He had done that. However, at this point, when they put him up on the ship, when they sort of rescued him for the little bit of time, he decided he was going to continue it. He reached Barbados on Christmas Eve. He had sailed 2,750 miles in 65 days. He had lost 56 pounds, but he was alive and well. The outcome of all of this, he proved his point. A person could survive if they knew how to live off of the sea. But again, they experienced a storm, and those storms can be really doozies, especially when you have those high, high waves, and he was just in this little boat. But it was an experiment. Boy, that took a lot of guts. That's all I can say, because I don't know that I would have ever done it. But that was done in the 50s, and I don't think anybody has challenged his record or decided they were going to attempt it again. If you find out about somebody, let me know, because I'd love to know what they had come up with. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Worldwide, 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then let me tell you what I see. Animal stories, I wasn't able to share this one with you last week, but I just absolutely loved it. Dogs are, wow, they're so special. They really are. I think animals are special anyway. But this is a story about one of our military fellows, Major Brian Dennis. And while he was on his second tour in Iraq, there was this skinny desert dog. Every time he and his unit went out, that would come out and greet him. Now, it was a wiry border collie, German Shepherd mix. And he was very shy of people. Well, you can imagine in that environment, people might look at him as a meal, or they just see him as a scavenger and they just don't want anything to do with him. Well, Brian was able to coax him with some scraps and little bits of goodies, and they ended up becoming very, very good friends. And he named the dog Nubs. Now, war zones, we all know how bad they can be. And one day, Brian found Nubs with a life-threatening chest injury, and he carried this dog back to his barracks, and Nubs got medical attention from the staff that was there. And Brian said, I'm going to take care of him. And he did, and Nubs made a full recovery. Now, after all of this goes on, after all this happens, just the way it is in the military, you're moved. And Brian's unit was ordered to relocate 70 miles away. Now, he was determined he was going to end up going back for Nubs after he finished his time at this new location. But he said Nubs just sat and watched everybody take off. And days later, Brian happened to be looking up at the horizon, and he sees something sort of limping along. It was the dog, Nubs. He had followed Brian for over 70 miles into the war zone, and it was freezing weather, to be with the man that he loved. And so Brian was just absolutely amazed, as were all the other soldiers, but regulations are regulations, and they don't allow soldiers to keep pets. So Brian decided he was going to try to get him to the United States, and he found that through friends, and there were also some different organizations, there were donations, they were able to cut through the red tape and arranged for Nubs to get vaccinated in Jordan and then flown to stay with friends in San Diego while Brian finished his tour in Iraq. Now, he ended up coming back to the USA, Brian did, finishing his second tour, and he wondered if Nubs would remember him. Well, there was no question about that. He knew who he was immediately. And they're good buddies. Brian does not have to go back to Iraq, and so they're inseparable companions at this time. And they are able, because Brian lives down in California on the coast, they're able to jog along the water, so both man and dog are living a very, very joyful life. Quite a nice story. I liked it anyway, and I thought you might enjoy it too. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Give me a call if you want to chat. 888-815-9756 worldwide or 877-876-5227. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Pete Smith here with OrthoTeb Health Shoes. These funky-looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories, you'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Hey, you want to give me a buzz? Call me at 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. And for those of you in Western Washington, don't forget my class. It's just 2 weeks away. That's right, April 25th. It's 10 to 4 that Saturday, and it includes lunch. Come on over to my website. Check it out. You'll find the information right up there on the events page and the appearances page. So go to DelphiInternational.com and you'll find out all the information. Better yet, just give me a call, 800-872-8852. Let's go to our caller for today. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna.
Hi. Now, there's a little bit of an echo, hon. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
I'm in Connecticut.
Connecticut? What part of Connecticut?
I'm in New Haven.
Wonderful. And first name or initial?
My name is Pat.
Hi, Pat. Well, welcome to the show. Now, Pat, the first thing that I'm looking at with you, there's a combination of things. One, there is a need for self-education. Apparently, you have some important subjects, or subject matter, I should say, that you're very interested in researching. And I want to say, don't try to do it all on your own. Try to enlist the assistance of a couple of other people, as many as you possibly can, because more minds working towards the same objective are really going to be very, very helpful. And because your time, you've got so much on your plate right now, you're lucky if you have time for a bubble bath. So you really need to ask for some help. Two, you're breaking through some major paradigms in your life. You have adopted certain attitudes and feelings, thinking that this is what you should do, and it worked fine for a while, but you've had some challenges these last 4 to 5 years, and you have come to the state of awareness that you need to break away. You need, I'm seeing you with this great big mallet, and you're just smashing through concrete. And it's real thick concrete. So to me, it symbolizes the belief systems. And you're smashing through them and saying, I don't have time for anything that is less than the truth. And you're just taking this very direct, clear action of smashing what is not working and getting past it so that you can move forward. This takes a lot of effort. This takes a lot of mindfulness. And I want to congratulate you because you're doing a good job. And you're not fearful. I'm not seeing any fear at all. I do think that you're going to be looking at some financial challenges that could come up, but you're going to be able to get through them slowly but surely. Don't try to bite off more than you can handle well. And apparently this has to do with the research again. But understand the investment that you're looking at making in yourself is going to bring you returns that are absolutely phenomenal. I really think that you are going to do an incredible job with what you have on your personal platform for accomplishment. I really think you are going to move forward so quickly. This year is going to be like a blink, and you're going to say, how did it go by so fast? But you're trying to gear up and prepare for 2010 because you've got a particular time frame and a patterning for accomplishment that you want to achieve. Go for it. You're not going to be sorry you did. Yes, there are going to be a few setbacks, hon, but it's not bad. It really, really is not bad. What question would you like to ask me today?
Oh, my goodness, I can't believe all that you just said. The education, I'm actually, I really am struggling financially, but I am, whenever I can, paying for healings and advice and readings and so on. Is that what you're talking about as far as that self-education?
No, it's going to be more than that. If you are, this is a combination of things, hon, but you have, as I'm looking at it, because the image of your smashing concrete, smashing obstacles with a mallet is very, very strong in my mind. So you are breaking through old belief systems, old patterns. You are saying, this I'm doing for myself.
Right.
And it is important that you do this because
yes,
you're realizing that you are finally seeing things as they should be seen. We all have filters, every one of us. There's not a person alive that doesn't have filters.
Mm.
And life often is an experience of learning about those filters and then making a decision whether we're going to let them go or we're going to use them, you know, it differently. We're going to change the filter, perhaps, or maybe get rid of the filter entirely. But we all have a filtering process, and it's what we're willing to do, and you're willing to, again, break old paradigms away, and you're doing it quite rapidly. So all of these other things that you're involved with are part of the process, but they're not all of it. Now, this research that I'm looking at you doing, I honestly don't know exactly what it's pertaining to. I don't know if it's pertaining to finances, if it's pertaining to career, if it's pertaining to health. I just don't know what it's pertaining to right at this moment.
Okay.
But I would say to you that there are some other people that can help you in the research.
Okay.
So don't be afraid to open your mouth. And if you're wanting to go and get a degree, do not be afraid to go to a local college and ask them, what can someone in my financial circumstance do? Are there scholarships, grants? What can I do to attain the money that I need?
Wow.
And, hon, I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but I'm out of time
phenomenal.
Here.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. And tell your friends about the show. And you have a fabulous evening now in Connecticut.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. Hey, we're going to be back tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com. And we're going to be talking about hockey tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Bruce Valley, who was a hockey player of hockey players. Seahawk is the name of his book. We're going to be chatting with him. Hope you can join me. This is Donna Siebel. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Go out, enjoy life. It is a gift. It is your gift. Make it something that's very special. Donna Sebo here. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.